Well, I've met a number of people over the past couple of years who swear that they don't go out on Saturday nights until after 8, so that they can be home by the radio between 6 and 8, listening to A Prairie Home Companion. With me is Garrison Keillor, the host of this live show of stories, humor, and music performance. The show started about 7 years ago in Minnesota. The past couple of years, it's been picked up by NPR affiliates around the country, and it's become a coast-to-coast phenomenon. Each week in big cities and small towns, listeners learn the latest news from Lake Wobegon, the imaginary Midwestern town in which Garrison's stories are set, where all the women are strong, the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average. The businesses of Lake Wobegon, like Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery, Bertha's Kitty Boutique, and the Fearmonger Shop, are their sponsors for the show, and their mottos are as well known to Prairie Home Companion listeners as the Dr. Pepper jingle is to the rest of the world. Garrison's listeners who enjoy his stories each Saturday on the radio will be pleased to hear that a collection of his short stories has just been published under the title Happy to Be Here. Most of the stories were initially published in The New Yorker during the 1970s. The stories include Jack Schmidt, Arts Administrator, about a hard-boiled detective turned arts administrator, Your Wedding and You, a manual with all the rules on how to plan a personalized alternative-type creative wedding, Shy Writes, Why Not Pretty Soon, a story that's perfect for Powdermilk biscuit consumers, and Don, the True Story of a Young Person, which is about a geek punk band that bites the necks of chickens as part of the act. Garrison's last visit to Philadelphia was in the fall when he did a special performance of A Prairie Home Companion at Swarthmore College before an extremely enthusiastic Delaware Valley audience. I recorded an interview with Garrison during that visit, but since he's with us live today, we thought we'd open up the phones and invite you to call with your questions and comments. We'll be getting to those phone calls in just a few minutes, but before we do that, Garrison Keillor, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And I hope that you'll open for us by reading one of the stories from your new collection, Happy to Be Here.
Well, I think I'll give you two for one. I'll read parts of two things here and see if I can join them together in the middle. I wrote an introduction for this book. Most people don't write introductions for collections because they want the writing to stand on its own and not to write some hasty words, you know, in the beginning. But I never thought that much of my prose to think that it had to stand by itself. I always like to add to it. So there's a little note about writing these stories in this book. I mentioned that all but three of them appeared in the magazine. All were written here in Minnesota, many of them in the front bedroom of an old stucco house in St. Paul, where I used to keep an unfinished novel. It lay on a shelf over the radiator, and next to it stood the typewriter stand up against a window that looked out on an elm tree and a yellow bungalow with blue trim across the street. I assume it was an elm because it died that spring during an elm epidemic, and the city foresters cut it down. But in fact, there are only four or five plants I can identify with certainty, and the elm is not one of them. I regret this, but there it is. Plant life has never been more to me than a sort of canvas backdrop. There was a house plant in that bedroom, too, some type of vine or vine-related plant, and it also died. I'd say that personal ignorance was the chief inspiration of that poor novel, the shelf novel, and was the main cause of its lingering death that summer, including ignorance of plants. In a novel, characters shouldn't lean against a tree. It ought to be a specific tree, birch or maple or oak. Just as when a character feels bad, it ought not be a vague sense of uneasiness, but something definitely wrong, and the writer should say what? An impacted molar, too much beer at the ball game, fear of spiders, or what? But in my shelf novel, all the guys were marathon leaners. They leaned against vague vegetation and felt vaguely ill and unhappy, probably the result of their getting no exercise and smoking so many cigarettes. They smoked cigarettes like some people use semicolons. I'm not sure at all. He lit a cigarette and inhaled deeply. Perhaps I never will. Sentence from my novel. After the elm died, the yellow bungalow was in clear view, and I began to notice a fat boy who spent most of his sunny afternoons sitting on the front steps, smoking Marlboros and drinking Gatorade. He had long blonde hair, styled after Farrah Fawcett's, and weighed a lot. He was 14, a neighbor lady told me, and his name was Curtis. Every afternoon he hove into view and plopped down and proceeded to while away the hours watching traffic. And by June, when school ended and he added a morning appearance, he was getting on my nerves. He was a nice boy, the neighbor said, was kind to children, including my own, and had every right to take the load off his feet. And I had no right to expect he should run around with other boys who probably made fun of him. But I did wish that he would do something, like read books. When I was 14, I was happy to read all day, every day, and into the night. I hid in closets and in the basement, locked myself in the bathroom, reading right up to the final moment when Mother pried the book from my fingers and shoved me outdoors into the land of living persons. She was right to do that. If she hadn't, I'd be 4 feet tall, have beady little eyes and a caved-in chest and a butt like a bushel basket. Boys stopped by the steps and talked to Curtis. He was no social outcast. From the typewriter, I noticed plenty of visits. Skinny kids in shorts, boys Curtis's age. They shifted from foot to foot and picked tufts of grass and threw them at each other, sat down, jumped up, poked each other, kicked stones, but not Curtis. He was set in concrete. The boys moved on. He stayed put, smoked his cigarettes, kept his hair in place. I could have moved my typewriter away from the window and put Curtis behind me. And yet the novel in front of me was no great shakes either, and in many ways less interesting than Curtis, the fat boy. Characters came into that novel, looked around for a few pages, and jumped ship. Suddenly, he decided to go to France. He had never been to France. France sounded pretty good to him. "Going to France," he said. She lit a cigarette and inhaled deeply. "You said that before," she said, sardonically. But this time was different. This time he actually went. She was really surprised, but there was no doubt about it. He was in France. I may never see him again, she thought, and she was right. She never did. Paragraph from my novel. Meanwhile, at the bungalow, Curtis's mom and dad emerged. She was pretty and probably a terrific cook, by the looks of things. The dad was, how can you put this gracefully, a real blimp, a wide load, and the white polyester stretch pants only emphasized the cargo. He tapped Curtis on the head, and the three of them got into their white Imperial. The adjustable steering wheel moved forward, the dad slid in, and the car moved off like a dirigible, loosed from the mooring mast. I guessed they were going out to eat, and not to a restaurant with a lot of sunlight and plants and spinach salads either. A joint where the plates are like platters, where the light is dim, and a big person can take on a cow, no questions asked. I could have quit the novel and put it in a box. It wasn't going anywhere. In fact, I quit it almost every day, put it in a box, wrote some more, and put that in the box. I wish my mother would come, rip the paper out of the carriage, and make me go play tennis. What kept me beating on this novel was the sheer size of it and of my investment in it. This was no birdhouse I had ruined, but a genuine mansion, a three-story plaster of Paris mansion deluxe of a novel designed by me and propped up by hundreds of 2x4s. A fellow doesn't walk away from a mistake that big. He likes to keep at it. He thinks that maybe the addition of one more 2x4 will solve the problem. I worked on the novel all summer. Curtis came out and sat on the steps morning and afternoon during August. Then school started, and he appeared only in the afternoon. So slowly, it occurred to me that I was only sitting around. And though a person would like to think that ambition counts for something, the fact that you are trying to write a novel, the truth is that it doesn't. There's no difference between a fat boy lounging on the steps and a man at a typewriter turning out bad writing. no difference at all. Not in this world or the next. I kept the cardboard box full of novel, thinking I wanted some evidence in case there is a difference, then decided to throw it away. I was in the midst of a divorce and was divesting myself of all sorts of possessions, and threw the novel into the back of a truck along with some other trash and never thought about it until thinking about this book. Curtis has lost a lot of weight, the neighbor lady tells me, and is doing quite well at the University of Minnesota, where he is majoring in plant pathology. He is married. My stucco house is still there. My boy is 12 years old. This book is dedicated to him. So that's why this book is not a novel. I threw the novel out.
Garrison just read us the introduction from his collection of short stories called Happy to Be Here that's published by Athenaeum. And I wish we had lots of time and could hear some of those short stories, but I'm sure our listeners will seek them out in book form. Well, Garrison, why don't we invite our listeners and your listeners to call with any questions or comments. People have been calling all week and asking when you'd be here. If it's something you'd like to talk with Garrison about, ask him any questions, our number's 923-2774, and we're at area code 215-923-2774. Is writing your short stories very different than the kind of writing mental or at the typewriter that you do for Prairie Home?
It is, because one way or another, I do a radio show every Saturday, and I accept the deadline. But writing stories is more of a luxury. I've had stories that have been sitting around for years, and I'm in no hurry to finish them up. I've been carrying one around with me on this trip now that I just about have done, but not quite.
When you were at Swarthmore for the performance that we recorded, and I should mention that Swarthmore show is going to be broadcast nationally on April 10th, so if you missed it the first time, it'll be coming around again April 10th from 6 until 8 that Saturday night. Because it was a room that had been a chapel, you went into a long talk about religion and church.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been wondering if you're religious.
Yes, I am. I was brought up fundamentalist. I'm not as fundamentalist as I used to be. I've lost some fundamentals. But I still have that. I'm sure everyone does who was brought up that way.
Are you in, like, an organized religion, or is it a more personal type of thing right now?
Right now?
Tell me if I'm prying.
Huh? No, you're not prying. I travel down the road to church, I'd say, about once a month. The problem with churches, for me, is that the preaching is so terrible. It's, as a rule, it's awful. The whole reason that people go to a church is to be with each other and to be part of a congregation. And every so often, if you're lucky, you will hear a minister stand up in front of a congregation and actually say something that has to do with the congregation's reason for being there. But usually it's some kind of book report, or it's a talk on the importance of being nice, or being a good listener, or being a good citizen, or something that you don't go to church for.
You know, you could say that Prairie Home, in a way, is like modeled on a religious service, where you're like the minister and you
be careful, you do, here, Terry.
Okay, wait.
Be very careful.
You tell parables, and they're not...
Everybody tells parables.
Well.
Who tells stories.
And then there's singing in between that everybody joins in on. Right?
The one thing missing is the collection.
We do that during fundraisers. Does that make any sense to you? Do you think there's a connection? I, just for the meaning it has for people, I bet that a lot of people who listen to Prairie Home if there were more religious, would be going to church. Not necessarily on Saturday night, of course. You know what I mean? But I wonder if that doesn't play that kind of function in some people's lives, of being that kind of gathering place with stories and parables and things that you're familiar with but you want to learn more about. Of course, a lot of it is double-edged when you're doing it.
I'm just not going to follow you down that road, Terry.
Okay.
You're trying to lead me down a road. my parents are not in the audience, but I have to talk as if they were.
Uh-huh.
And they would be horrified if I ever thought of this show as something like that.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Gee, I didn't even realize it's something that could be offensive to someone, so I guess...
Well, it's a show. It's entertainment. It's not... has nothing to do with doctrine or theology. I mean, I might think it does in my heart of hearts, but I wouldn't want to claim that it does.
Okay, well, before I lead you any further down this path, why don't we take some phone calls? Okay. We're at 923-2774, and my guest is Garrison Keillor. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, Garrison.
Yes, sir.
I am a shy person myself, so I know you'll appreciate how difficult this phone call is for me.
Well, listen, you were the first one to call in. You can't be all that shy.
I am sort of a fan. I would be more of a fan if I could hear more of your show. Mm-hmm. Saturday night here in the East at 6 to 8 is a terrible time, and we usually have kids with spaghetti hanging out of their mouth and stuff, and it's just really difficult to hear your show in any coherent way. And I was wondering, is there any hope at all for like a second rebroadcast or something of your show so that those of us who can't hear it at the original time might be able to hear it as rebroadcast some other time?
Well, that would be up to the stations that carry it. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not about to do it a second time. Once is enough for me. Once I'm done with it back in St. Paul, I get on my horse and go home.
Well, I understand that. I had called the station, and they led me to believe that, I thought, unless I misunderstood, that you intended it to be a one-time, you know, live airing, and that you somehow discouraged a second airing, or...
No, many stations rebroadcast it on Sundays, but that's up to the stations, and I think that broadcasting a two-hour show twice uses up a little bit more airtime than really we ought to. So, yeah, my preference is that it be a live broadcast and go out the same time we do it, and then that's it.
Okay, well, Terry, here's one vote for a rebroadcast.
Okay.
Okay, we're jotting it down. Okay, thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello there.
Hello.
This is Bruce Mills. How are you?
Hi, Bruce.
Hello there, Garrison.
Hello, sir.
How are you? I just wonder if when you were at the age of like around 8 or 9, if when you used to lie down at night in bed, if you ever, let's say, talked to yourself and made up characters about certain things and so forth. Because I used to do something like that when I was that age. And judging from your monologues about your little town that you love so much, it just seems to me that... possibly might have done that when you were younger. Am I right?
Well, I didn't lie in bed and talk to myself because I shared a bedroom with three other brothers.
Oh, I shared a bedroom with one other brother, and I used to bug him to death. He used to say, "Why don't you go to sleep?" But
well,
anyway.
You were braver than I was. I did sit at a desk and write out stories on my big red Indian chief tablet.
At that age, at 9, 10, and so 8, 9, and whatever?
Yeah. Not 8, but 9 or 10, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm an entertainer musician myself.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I've played with such musicians as Art Blakey and a lot of people that you may or may not have heard of.
Well, Art Blakey, I think everyone's heard of, and the Jazz Messenger, sure.
Yes, but I'm wondering, your Steinway, that piano at the World Theater is a Steinway, is it not?
It's an old radio Steinway from an old...
I knew it was an old one.
Yeah.
I knew it was about 50 or 60 years old, right?
Yeah.
And there may come a day, hopefully, when I would like to come out and see St. Paul and walk around with my walking stick and so forth and so on. And at that time, I would, I hopefully would like to meet you. And I also tune pianos.
Okay.
And if there's ever a time when you might want me to tune that Steinway for you. I would like to tune it for you.
I'll mention it to Maurice, our piano tuner. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Bruce. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, Garrison.
Yes, sir.
I'm from a small town in New Jersey, and I've been having a devil's own time trying to find any of those powder milk biscuits, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering what we could do about that in the East here.
Well, our distribution system is way behind our marketing system. It's kind of like the book publishing industry, you know. Book publishers, their distribution system is sort of back in the 19th century. They send out books by railway freight car. And with powder milk biscuits, it's the same. Now, I thought they had sent a batch to New Jersey, but it might have gone up to North Dakota.
Maybe it's sort of being distributed the way they distributed that free cheese, which means that very little of it leaked through.
None of it trickled down to you, huh?
I wasn't looking for the cheese. I was looking for the biscuits.
All right. Well,
Small price to pay, a small disappointment that we have here in the East, but we're sure glad to catch you on Saturday evenings. It brightens our day.
All right.
Thanks for your call.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Garrison Keillor is my guest. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering who Garrison's influences are in writing. Who did he read when he grew up? Who did he model himself after when he was starting out, if he was interested in journalism at first, novelist, that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
When you sit down today to read a good book, who do you go looking for? Who did you read when you were growing up?
I read everything I could get my hands on when I was growing up because I had a hard time learning to read. I remember when I was in the first and second grades that I was embarrassed by the fact that I could not read in front of the class. And so when finally I sort of got the knack of it, when I was in the third and fourth grade, I started reading everything that I could find. And I read a lot of Minnesota writers when I was young. I read Sinclair Lewis, not when I was in third or fourth grade, but in junior high school. I read most of his work in F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
But I think the writer who was most important to me was E.B. White. Hmm. I don't know that he was very influential. I'd certainly try hard to resist his influence. I don't want to sit around for the next 10 years and write like E.B. White. He writes like E.B. White better than I could ever write like E.B. White. But he was someone who showed writers like me what is possible in the essay.
Mm-hmm.
And did things that I aspire to. Though he's identified with the New Yorker magazine, his best writing was done away from the New Yorker. A lot of his New Yorker work tends to be a little precious and a little dated, mm-hmm. but a book of his I recommend to you is One Man's Meat.
One Man's Meat.
Which consists of columns that he wrote for Harper's Magazine in the late 1930s when he had just moved from New York up to a farm in Maine. And that is, I think, just about his best book, that and his letters.
Yeah, I detect a real kind of populist feeling in, I must admit, that piece you read at the top of the hour there was the first I'd heard of your writing, but mm-hmm. in a lot of the stories you tell on Prairie Home,
mm-hmm.
a definite populist kind of feel to it, which I really enjoy.
Well, populist, speaking of E.B. White, in the way that he is a writer who takes spoken English and raises it into a literary style.
Yeah.
Right. Most of his very best writing, there's nothing stilted about it. There's nothing fine about it unless you start to study it and look closely at it. It could be spoken
mm-hmm.
very nicely, and it all bears his voice.
Yeah, that's the best kind of writing for me. Always like that kind of stuff.
Well, thanks very much for your call. We want to get in as many calls as possible. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot. I wonder what Sinclair Lewis would think of your stories if he read them. Do you ever think about that?
Well, Sinclair Lewis was a novelist, and he had a great antipathy to the New Yorker and the New Yorker crowd of the 20s and 30s. He was a very awkward, gangly young man from Minnesota, and he remained an awkward, gangly young man all of his life. And he always wanted to be accepted by that crowd at the New Yorker and never felt that he was. I guess that in my day, people from Minnesota are less worried about whether to be accepted by them or not, and it makes us a little less awkward. I don't know. What do you think about the writing? Probably not much. You think it was too short and too easy.
Let's take another phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Oh, thanks very much. I just wanted to tell Garrison that I grew up in a little Midwestern prairie town, and I've been away from there for many years.
Which town is that?
Lawrenceville, Illinois.
Uh-huh.
It's a little we're the county seat, 5,000 people. But I went to school out in Iowa, Grinnell, which is south from Minneapolis. So it's home country to me, and it's just real good to hear that point of view and hear something coming out of that part of the world. You know, it also kind of makes me feel I wanted to get out of there so bad when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But now it brings back a lot of the good things I never really appreciated growing up there.
Well, you did appreciate them, and you carried them with you.
Yeah.
All the best of it you got with you right now. It's in your head and it's in your heart. And the rest of it is scenery, right?
Right.
Okay.
Thanks so much for your show.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. You were reading The New Yorker before you were published in it. Was it? Did it seem like it was coming from very far away when you were living in, I forget the name of the town you grew up in?
Anoka.
Anoka, yeah.
Or Lake Wobegon, you think.
That's right. Yeah. But was it, did it seem almost exotic to you when you started reading it?
It seemed like it came from the far side of the moon. I started reading The New Yorker when The New Yorker was entering into its serious journalism phase. Right after World War II, they published John Hersey's Hiroshima. They had published a lot of war reporting during the war, and they became a more serious magazine. But they still had touches back then in the 50s of the old gay Broadway spirit of the early New Yorker and the Algonquin writers. And that was the part that was really dazzling to me, to read Walcott Gibbs's Broadway reviews of plays and musicals that I'd never heard of, never would go see, and to read A.J. Liebling's pieces about low life in New York City, and then all of it surrounded by beautiful advertisements for things that I and my family would never have. It was quite dazzling. It was as if an ocean liner had anchored off the shore of Minnesota and was just waiting out there, out on the horizon, for us to row out in canoes and join the party.
Garrison Keillor's short stories that are published now under the title of the collection Happy to Be Here were for the most part initially published in The New Yorker, and that makes you now part of a great literary tradition of people whose collected stories from The New Yorker have eventually been published, you know, especially like Salinger, and of course a lot of Donald Barthelme stuff initially appeared in The New Yorker.
And it also puts me in the tradition of a lot of writers whose names have been rightfully forgotten.
That's right. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Our lines are all tied up at the moment. Garrison Keillor is here. He's on a book tour, actually, for the publication of this new book, Happy to Be Here. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yeah, I've got a question for you. I'm about the far edge of the ever-increasing definition of middle age, and I'm thinking that as I grew up listening to the radio, I'm finding that the opportunities less and less now. I ended up with one show, Prairie Home Companion, which I've been following through three states now. I was wondering what your age is.
I'm 39, and I'm on the verge of 40.
What a coinkydink.
Are you right there, too?
I'm right there, buddy.
Well, when do you turn 40?
January.
Oh, January 83.
Right.
Well, that's not what I would call on the brink at all.
It's an ever-widening precipice, yeah.
You've got a lot of time now. You just take a long run at it.
You mentioned before, you know, the fellow was asking you some of your models. You mentioned E.D. White as the one you were most closely identified with, or you had the best memory of. How about Max Schulman?
Max Schulman wrote a humor column that appeared in the college paper when I was at the university. I took a lot of interest in him at the time because he went to the University of Minnesota.
Yeah.
And then left it when he was fairly young. He claimed to have been kicked out, wrote Barefoot Boy with Cheek,
right,
and then went on to write movie scripts. I think he went off to California.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed him in a way, and then I got tired of him, because it seemed to me as if his comic effects were sort of like tickling. You know, if somebody tickles you, it's funny the first couple of times, but when they keep at it, it becomes a bother.
It gets old real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you were in Swarthmore last time, did you find a sidetrack tap in Swarthmore? I think about every town the size of Swarthmore, which I live in Springfield by Swarthmore,
mm-hmm,
has got a sidetrack tap. And as I'm just new to the area, I wonder if you might save me some legwork.
You mean in the town of Media?
Swarthmore.
I didn't know there was a town of Swarthmore. I thought
sure.
That was just the college.
No, it's there. I don't know how familiar you are with the southeastern part of Pennsylvania.
Well, sir, I don't think we'd be recommending places to go on the air anyways,
but
frankly.
I was wondering if there is a sidetrack tap. There seems to me there's one in every town. I was wondering if you found one there.
Swarthmore, I'd have my doubts, but you head on down the highway. You'll find one soon.
Thanks so much for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, thank you, Terry. Hello, Garrison.
Yes, hi.
Seeing I caught the very first show that came over our local PBS station, and I was so astounded, and I haven't missed very many since, and I'm telling everybody about it. I like everything on your show, but I was wondering, I get a special kick out of Margaret Haskins Durber,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Poems?
Yeah.
And I wondered if any of them are in print, if she or he, maybe, has ever published a poem?
Yeah, there was a selected verse of Margaret Haskins Durber, which was put out back in Minnesota. We're going to put out another one soon. The problem is that she keeps writing poems, and as soon as we're ready to close the door on the collection, she adds another one. So I don't know when it's going to be.
Well, the more the merrier.
Collected. Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm in no hurry to collect.
She, as well as her poems, as well as your little songs,
yeah,
remind me a lot of Ogden Nash's style.
Yes, well, they ought to, because I think she learned a lot of it from Ogden Nash.
Maybe she learned a lot from you, too.
I think Ogden Nash had some better rhymes than Margaret Haskins Durber does. I mean, in his best stuff, he always pulled out of his hat one absolutely amazing rhyme.
Oh, yes, usually the last, and that last line.
He always aimed for it in the last line, yeah.
Well, it's the same type of humor and nonsense, and I guess that's my favorite.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy Ogden Nash.
Oh, I enjoy your songs, too.
Well, thanks so much for your call. Thanks for calling us. Bye-bye now. Do you have her work committed to memory, Garrison?
No, it's mainly her work and not my own. Let me see. I think I know a couple of her poems. Boy, you're putting me on the spot, aren't you? one of the poems that I know of hers probably wouldn't make much sense out here, because it simply is a poem that includes all of the counties of Minnesota in alphabetical order. Wherever you live with your friends or your family, Lee, out in a farm or in city or town, in Aiken, Anoka, Becker, Beltrami, Benton, Big Stone, Blue Earth, or Brown, wherever you live and only you know, in Carlton, Carver, Cass, Chippewa, Chisago, and so on and so on and so on. I'd recite you another poem if we had time.
We do.
Really? Maybe I'd take another call or two.
You want to do the poem first? Or? Would you rather take another call first?
Sure.
Okay.
Somebody's waiting there. I feel... Okay.
Our number is 923-2774, and we're inviting you to call and speak directly with Garrison Keillor, the host of A Prairie Home Companion that you can hear every Saturday between 6 and 8 here on WUHY. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering how you get the fidelity. Everything you write rings so true. Did you sit down first and write down all the characters and what their personalities and traits are so that when you write your piece every week, you refer back to and you know that Pastor Inquist would never do this or, you know, any of the other people would always react this way? In other words, do you sort of have a master plan of what the people of Lake Wobegon are like? And then you build your pieces around that.
Well, I tell you, if I had known that people were going to listen as closely as some of them do to that Lake Wobegon monologue, I would have done just that and sat down and worked out a plan. Because people, every so often, will call me and correct me on details. And they say, what do you mean that Carl Krebsbach is married to Nancy Tallerud? That's not true. It's Carl and Eloise, or whatever the detail is. But see, my great advantage in talking about Lake Wobegon is that all of the residents of Lake Wobegon don't live in our listening area, wouldn't listen to the show anyway, and so they're not there to challenge me on the details. So I'm glad that you feel that it's true to form, but if you could talk to some of the people up there in the town, you'd probably find out differently.
Thanks so much for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, I want to thank you. I just found your station on the dial, and I listened to the Prairie Show for the first time last Saturday. I think it's fantastic.
Okay, the station is at 91, so don't lose your place.
Oh, I haven't. It's on 24 hours a day, even though it goes off the air at 1 and comes back on at 6.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a question for Garrison, please.
Yeah.
How long can you keep on doing this? Keep on having the same format every Saturday? I'm just curious how you would change it or what would be different, especially in the future.
Well, you know, I hadn't thought about it. You think something... It's going to fall apart soon, or?
Well, you know how it is. Things get successful, and then they kind of lose it after a while.
Do you think so?
And I just wonder if...
Do you think that's the way it is? I don't think that's the way it is.
Oh, I guess so.
I mean, I don't think that's the way it has to be. I think there are a lot of people who stay with something for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
You see, now there are performers and there are writers who want to keep changing and keep growing, as they put it, or as somebody else might put it, they need constant novelty. But I'm not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I'd be satisfied to sit around and do my hoop stitching every Saturday night for about as long as people wanted me to.
Well, I hope it's another 10 or 20 years.
Well, we'll see, but in the meantime, we have a lot of fun doing the show.
Yeah, I enjoy listening to it, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Pam Miller, Garrison, and I'd like you to give a personal message to some friends of mine out there.
You would?
Yeah, Pop Wagner and Charlie McGuire.
Okay.
I went to school with them, and I just love listening to your show, and I was just shocked to hear them on there, so that gives me more of a reason to listen.
Good. Charlie is going to be on the show with us this coming Saturday.
Great.
And he's going to do a wonderful train song that was, the poem was sent in to us by a 74-year-old man who lives out in western Minnesota. And it just is a beautiful poem.
Great.
About going down to the station and seeing the 7 o'clock train.
Yeah, I loved his that baby song for his
yes.
new child that he sang
yes.
a couple of weeks ago. That was really a beautiful song, too.
All right. Well, I'll see you Saturday night.
Okay. Now, and Terry, thanks for your show, too.
Oh, thanks.
Really appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Yes, Garrison, this is Herman Barron. I saw your Swarthmore show, and I really enjoyed it. My wife listens to your show every week. Two questions.
Yeah.
One is, you don't talk too much about your weekly radio show. Is it the same format as the Saturday night show? And the second question is, in central Wisconsin, I ran across a little cafe that serves green tea in addition to black tea. Is this a Scandinavian custom? Because I really associate it with the Orientals.
No, green tea is an old custom up there. We used to have salad of tea, which used to appear on the in lettering on the screen doors of every small grocery store in South Minneapolis, which is where the Scandinavians hang out.
Did they get it from the Orient, the green tea?
I think that Norwegians got green tea from the Orient, which they discovered by way of the Northwest Passage, which went through Wilmer, Grand Forks, and Williston, North Dakota.
Thank you.
Yeah.
How about your radio show, then, on weekdays?
I do a weekday early morning radio show from 6 to 9 in the morning back in Minnesota, which is it's just your standard early morning disc jockey, records, news, weather, and loose talk that is on most stations. I don't know how much longer I can keep on doing it because I have never gotten used to going to bed early at night.
By the way, what do you do with all the personal messages that people leave on the show that you never discuss during the show?
I read them myself, and then I soak them in water, and I eat them.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye-bye. Thanks for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Mr. Keeler.
Hello, sir.
Oh, I really love your show. I followed it through a lot of states, too. Listen, I wanted to ask. I write songs.
Yes, sir.
And mine are somewhat like yours. In other words, there's lots of words, if nothing else, if no other similarity.
Yeah.
Do you actually memorize a song of yours a week? The reason I ask that is that I find it more difficult to memorize my own songs than someone else's because of all the revisions. Maybe I'll remember the first version and not the second version and so forth. I don't know if I'm making sense on that point. But
that shouldn't be, by the way. Things that you have written yourself, you ought to find easier to memorize than things that other people have written.
Hmm.
I think, as a rule.
Why do you?
Maybe you're writing too many words in the song.
Oh, well, I was actually my question for you was just: do you find it difficult to remember your songs? Of course, we can't see whether you're holding the paper or anything like that, but remember the tune. In other words, how much do you rehearse at least that part of your program?
Well, the songs that I do, I think, follow probably one of three basic melodies. And so I can't really remember the melody, but I sing it, you know, in some musical way. The lyrics of songs... If I've just written a song on Thursday or Friday, I'll keep it out there on the stand with me. But a lot of them I know by heart. I'd even recite you one by heart. And Terry Gross would swear that I don't have a piece of paper in front of me.
No, I take you word.
Wait. You have paper in front of you, it just doesn't have the lyrics on it.
Right.
I have a really quick question.
Yeah.
I just want to know, what is a Norwegian bachelor farmer? I'm from Kansas, and my family are all farmers, but we have none of those, and I just... Well, if you could answer that, I'd really like to know what a Norwegian bachelor farmer is.
All right.
I know I'm really revealing a lot of ignorance there, but so it is.
I have to be careful in talking about the Norwegian bachelor farmers because there are many people whose fathers are Norwegian bachelor farmers, and I would not want to insult them. But they are men who live by themselves out in one- or two-room houses or shacks, whatever you want to call them, and farm and raise the wheat that makes powder milk biscuits. They live out to the west of town, out where the prairie begins.
Mm-hmm.
They are Norwegian. Not all of them are strictly Norwegian, but they're Norwegian in the sense that they are secretive and they are mysterious and they have... A great sense of religion and of the mystery of life. And this makes them live lives that seem a little odd to other people. They don't shave every day, nor always every week or every month. They bathe once a week, whether they need it or not, as we say. And some of them don't have time to bury their junk or their trash, and they throw it out the back door.
Do they exist in St. Paul? I mean, is there a...
They're everywhere.
In St. Paul?
They're everywhere. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Garrison Keillor is here, and the occasion for his visit is the publication of a new collection of short stories under the title Happy to Be Here. Most of these short stories were initially published during the 1970s in the New Yorker magazine. And in case you've never heard of Prairie Home Companion, Garrison's show, we feature it here on WUHY every Saturday evening from 6 until 8. And for those of you who were at the Swarthmore concert and wanted to hear that again, we're going to have another broadcast of it April 10th, Saturday night, April 10th. Let's take another phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Okay, I just wanted to say hi to Garrison. I listen to the program every Saturday night.
You almost said watch.
I know. Because you know what I had done sometimes, I would turn the television on.
Yeah.
And I'm more interested in you than the TV, so I start turning the television off.
Well, all right. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes?
Go ahead.
Hello.
Oh. Hi, I was wondering, since now you're a famous author and media personality, and I know you have a good handshake from bookstore, whether you're considering running for some high elective office like Gore Vidal is.
He is?
Well, there was some talk about his running for governor, I think, or senator in California.
Oh, good heavens, I hope he doesn't try it. Be wasting an awful lot of his time, and I don't think he'd enjoy it, and I don't think California would enjoy it a lot either.
Mm-hmm. So you're not doing anything like that?
Oh, no. No, I know people who are, have given their lives to it, and I don't envy them one bit. I'm glad that they're there working on behalf of the rest of us, but I have no desire to be one of them.
I see.
You have to sit through an awful lot of boring meetings. Really.
Well, then, I'm glad to hear that you'll remain on the air, then.
Well, I hope to.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi. Garrison.
Yes.
I just wanted to say that my wife and I listen to your show every week, and we love it. It's just fabulous. I was wondering if ever you had thought about putting Prairie Home Companion on television in the same way that All Things Considered was recently put on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought about, putting it on the air like that?
Well, I suppose I have thought about it, but I quit thinking about it whenever I have gone on television.
Yeah.
And I did that this morning and looked at a picture of me in the monitor that faces you when you're on the set. Mm-hmm. And I think that pretty well disposed of that idea for probably another 6 months or a year.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
One other question.
Yeah.
My wife and I have argued about this incessantly, and I thought I'd ask you, since I have you in person, sort of.
Okay.
Are there really such things as pineapple biscuits?
How do you mean?
We haven't been able to find them. We've been asking our friends from out in Minnesota and Wisconsin, and they're not sure. They won't really admit it. And I was wondering if there really are things like that.
They won't really admit what?
They say, well, they don't see them in the store.
Yeah.
And we said, we don't see them in the store either.
Yeah. So you're asking me if there really are powder mill biscuits?
If there really are, if they're just confined to Lake Wobegon.
How are we defining really now, or reality?
I think you answered my question.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sorry.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to Garrison.
Yeah, I'm right here.
I know you are. I'd just like to tell you that one time I was stationed up in Lake Wobegon when I was in the Air Force.
My goodness.
And as a matter of fact, actually, I was stationed at Snelling Air Force Base down in the city, but we had this little radar installation up in Wobegon. We used to go up there quite a bit, so I know just exactly what you're talking about. Besides which, I'm a Midwesterner, anyway.
We thought that was the water tower.
No, actually, we had some secret people hidden up there with this funny little antenna that went around. It used to go around about once a minute.
Uh-huh.
And
so that's why
the chicks in the area got a little strange after that.
That's why the reception was so poor.
That's probably true.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you got that out of there, I'm glad to say.
Yes, I think they took it down about 10 years ago.
Now we're using it as a satellite dish to transmit our show.
But I really do enjoy your show. It's kind of like being home again.
All right. Thank you, now.
Righto.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
I really don't have a whole lot to say other than I want to add to the kudos of Saturday night between 6 and 8. It's just delightful. We don't have a television set, so that becomes an absolutely enjoyable time for all family members where we're all shushing one another to hear the monologue. I love the man with the mouth sounds.
Mm-hmm.
He was so entertaining. He has us all screaming, trying to figure out what kind of contortions he's making with his mouth and his face. It's just terrific. We really, really enjoy it. We've told as many people who will sit still long enough to hear everyone do a portion of your monologue.
All right.
Anyway, love it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. I love the timbre of your voice, too. It's just exquisite.
Timbre?
Mm-hmm.
Unsanded timbre.
You bet.
All right.
Rough and low. It's lovely.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. Thanks for calling.
We're getting so many phone calls like that. I think Bill Siemering is going to come in here and start raising some money on the air in just a minute. We ought to grab these people while we can.
Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Garrison, I sound sort of redundant to say this at this point, but I, as well as the rest of the folks that have been talking, we do really enjoy the show. I've got two young children, and we spend a good portion of our evening, Saturday evening, stomping our feet and tapping around and listening and so on. What I called in particular about was to congratulate you on the things you say about shy people. I have been conducting workshops for shy people over the last 4 or 5 years through a Penn State campus near here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right on the money with the things you say, with the approach you take. You obviously have a lot of sensitivity for not just the problems of shy people, but also, I think, how to deal with them, the philosophical approach you take to it. And the next time I conduct a workshop, I'll be sure to make your program required listening, because I think you say as much as I could say, certainly, in the time that you have. Do a real good job of that, so I wanted to let you know about that.
Well, thank you. I think that shy people are helped if they can see that there's something funny about it,
mm-hmm.
and that when they treat it as a terrible, serious problem, it only becomes worse. And there is something funny about shyness, and mm-hmm. I keep trying to discover it every week.
And it's also, I think, helpful to find out that they're not alone.
No.
That it's really something that's within their power to do something about, that you can function well in the world, despite the fact that you have some of the same insecurities that the rest of the folks are having.
That's true, you can.
Indeed.
Thanks so much for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Hi. I didn't expect to get on. There's too many people ahead of me telling me how great Prairie Home Companion is.
Well, I will have to ask you to keep it real brief, though.
Okay. I want to first of all say thanks a whole lot because you wished Charlie a happy birthday when I wrote your fan letter.
I did. Well, I'm glad I did.
You did. He was glad you did, too. In fact, when he took a shower, I made him turn the water off every time he started to talk so he would be sure to not miss it.
So
we want to know if you're going to be in Philadelphia in April. You can come to our wedding.
In April? No. In April, I'm going to be in St. Paul.
Oh, well.
Because that's a month not to miss in St. Paul.
Really? The thaw, right?
Well, the thaw, we hope, is going to be in March.
Oh.
And April, we hope, is going to be actual what we call spring.
Oh. Well, have a nice thaw and nice spring.
Have a nice wedding.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Well, I think we won't have time for any more phone calls. It's just a couple of minutes to 5 o'clock, and we're going to be joining National Public Radio for All Things Considered at 5. Garrison, I've been wondering what it's been like for you who are or were kind of shy and who has done a lot of interviews and done hundreds or thousands of radio shows to be on this book tour now, getting interviewed on national and local radio and TV shows. The tables have been turned for you, I guess. I think it's always unusual for someone who's used to being the interviewer to be the interviewee, and so frequently.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a lot of fun. And it's also been there have been horrible parts. Television for me is generally horrible. There's a great atmosphere of crisis that surrounds it, and there are always four or five or six assistant to the assistants, you know, who are running around getting you in place. And you sit there on camera, and right behind the camera there are people gesturing and waving and holding up cards and doing things. And I'm glad that it's so short when you go on television. It's usually 4 or 5 minutes, because that's about all a person can stand. It is so tense. Even for the people who do it, they're tense too. But radio, I've gotten to meet a lot of people in radio. I got to meet Henry Morgan, who does a radio show out of New York called Morgan on Media. And he looks just the same as he used to be on What's My Line. And he's just the same salty old curmudgeon that he used to be. And to hear that he listens to our radio show,
he does,
really gave me a lot of pleasure.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, briefly, what's the status of the novel that you are working on?
Well, I'm going to go back to Minnesota and start work on a Lake Wobegon book. I don't know if it will be a novel, but it will be stories. And I'm going to start work on that down in the basement of NPR in the janitor's closet in the month of April.
Well, thanks so much for being here again, Garrison Keillor. And if you'd like to read some of Garrison's work, his collection of short stories, Happy to Be Here, has just been published by Athenaeum Stories, that had, for the most part, initially been published in The New Yorker.